This is spectacular. It's hit with no regard for humanity. Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is! Switzerland! And Shaqiri has scored in the 90th minute. That was worth the price of admission alone.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Well, the Roadwind situation is great. It shows that we're growing in character, because I think, you know, you need to go to win on the road in this league. You need personality. You need, of course, talent and game plans and all this stuff, but you also need personality. And, you know, that's what we really asked the guys tonight for. At times at home, we haven't had that. And so I'm glad our away form has been good, because, frankly, our home form hasn't been as good as it has been last year. So still looking to fix that, but really proud of the guys. This is first win here in franchise history. It's been a tough place to play.
Big win for the Houston Dynamo, and it, you know, this was a grind them out affair. These were like boxers that were just on their last swings. I mean, these guys have been playing so many games. A lot of this was based on the desire, and the game needed a special play, and boy, did it get one. I posted the bicycle kick from Coco Karaskia, and Coco's bicycle was instinctive, and he'll talk about it tonight. We have him coming up in the second hour, Coco Karaskia. We also have Jason Longshore. So we're going to ask Coco all the things that we would want to ask him. All right, here's Ben Olsen on sustaining the project, which him, Pat Onstad, Asher Mendelson, and the entire staff and club are working on.
Build something that is kind of is sustainable, and have some, not just have a year where, you know, we win a trophy and go to the way. We have to sustain that to show that we're worth this project. And whether it's me or Pat or Asher, that's what we're here to do, is to have some type of sustained success. And that starts with getting into the playoffs.
So that was Ben Olsen on sustaining it. You know, you've heard Pat Onstad mention, you know, getting to the playoffs each year is got to be the norm. I think so. And he was right on top of that. They're going to get into the playoffs again this year. Here's Ben Olsen on Coco Karaskia. And obviously Coco in the Hector Herrera role now, scored the magnificent goal. It's great to see him. I love Coco Karaskia and the humility that he carries and brings to the game. I think you're really going to like his interview here tonight. That'll be coming up next in the next segment. Here's Coco Karaskia.
You know, it's collective, and asking guys to be ready to adapt. And Coco's a great example of that. Got a lot of guys do it and they don't get, you know, kind of credit for it. But I think when you score a bike, I think he'll get the accolades he deserves tonight, because he had a good performance. It's not an easy role to step into. You're replacing one of the best players in the league in that position. And he's growing in there with Artie. They still have a ways to go to get to that kind of Hector-Artur relationship. But it's nice to have him. It's nice to have versatile players, and he's one of them.
Seattle Sounders are up next for the Houston Dynamo. And Seattle had a real staggered start to the season. But, I mean, as always, Brian Schmetzer has got them rolling again, and that'll be a tough game on the artificial surface. That'll be a real test for the Dynamo. Here's Dynamo manager Ben Olsen on Seattle.
All right, Ben. Great win on the road. Set the record for most wins, road wins in club history in the single season, and first win here in Austin.
Okay, that this would be soundbite 12. All right, that's okay.
We'll see you on Blessing.
He went on to talk about injuries, Latif Blessing. They're not sure about Ezequiel Ponce. So who knows what's going to happen up there in Seattle when it comes to injured players. And that's also a big piece of what happens. You know, you sustain an injury to key players at this point, it's real trouble. And Hector Herrera, we don't know where he's at. We don't generally get really progress reports. So it's a little bit of thinking about it kind of on your own. I also want to thank Capelli Sport. They've given me a bunch of soccer balls that I've given out, small soccer balls, when we go and speak to kids about broadcasting, myself and a guy named Ken Schlein, who's a production expert and has been involved over 40 years in Houston here. Hugh O'Connor's Pub out on I-10 in the Marquee Entertainment Center. Big thank you to them, Peter, all of them out there. Great beer, whiskey offerings out there. They got all the best British food, Bangers and Mash, et cetera, et cetera. Great spot for the Premier League. Beautiful, clean, pristine place. It's Hugh O'Connor's Pub. They got a number of locations now. They just opened one in West U as well. And then Little Patagonia. Again, we're munching on these great Little Patagonia empanadas. All right, right now, great friend comes on the show. Also was a member, and this is a little bit of Houston soccer history here. He was also a member of the Houston Hotshots back in the day when they played at the Summit, which was the old NBA arena for the Rockets, now the Osteen Church. David Dievertal played for the Hotshots professionally. He's been a youth soccer coach in the area for over 25 years, contributing a ton to the game. Currently, he is the HTX Soccer Club's South Director of Operation, and David joins us now. David, how are you?
I am good, Glenn. It's a pleasure to be here talking to the fans and whatnot, but looking forward to a short chat with you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you coming on. Let's first start off to something that I want to explain to everybody here, and then we'll get into David's career and kind of what he's seen through his lens being such a part of the Houston soccer community. So his club is HTX. He's the South Club Director. He's been involved, as I mentioned, in coaching for a long time. So David comes to me and says, hey, we want to do one of these Kick Cancer Camps, much like the one the Cyfair Dynamos do with Olivier Finidori. All the proceeds benefit the Snowdrop Foundation, a 501c charity. And I said, man, David, you don't know how happy this makes me. I mean, you're coming to me saying you want to do it. You want to take the lead on it. You want to organize it. We're going to help you with Snowdrop Foundation. So you can imagine how excited I am, because these things are all important. And I think, you know, through the platform of soccer, I think over the years, and it's not about the money, it's really more about the awareness. But I do believe through all these soccer-related events for many, many years, we've probably raised, you know, 300 to 400 grand, because they were all different entities and things that have gone back to pediatric cancer fight. So David comes to me and says, let's do it. So we're going to do it. And David's spearheading this, and a big thanks to him for this, David. Thank you. November 22nd, it's a Friday, 6 to 7:30 p.m. It's going to be at the Dave Finkel Complex, 14,500 Village Evergreen Trail in Houston, 77062. You register at thedriven.net. But David, I just want to give the platform to you now. Just talk about, you know, why you thought about doing this, why you wanted to reach out. I know you obviously care for youth. Platform's yours.
So it's always been a joint effort with some of the staff. You know, we've always talked about getting back to some of the things we've done in the past, especially, you know, giving back. You know, so with a rich community as Houston and soccer being the platform that we're on, you know, years back we've been part of Kick Cancer, and it's been so valuable, not just being an awareness, but just being, you know, something that has been embedded in the community where everybody sees there's some part or some connection with families, friends, neighbors, whoever, that cancer has affected them. So, you know, we've always looked to, you know, still be a part of it. And now that, you know, it's come to, you know, fruition that, hey, look, you know, we'll like to come back and partner, you know, even though the landscape of soccer has changed a bit, you know, the blessing that, hey, you know, others can give and we be the light for just giving back, you know, to show that strong support in our community. So, you know, HDX, you know, along with, you know, my director, Randy, you know, when we spoke, we were like, yeah, let's get it back rolling once more. to get the kids, the family, the neighborhood, and everybody involved.
Yeah, and then let's get it back, because it was Space City when Randy was there a long time ago, and we, yeah, had about 7 or 8 sites going around the city at that time. Space City was heavily involved, so that's great. Again, it's HTX, the Youth Soccer Club, Kick Cancer Camp. It's going to be at the Dave Finkel Complex. It's open to everybody. It's 14500 Village Evergreen Trail in Houston. We would love you to be a part of it. $50 and a T-shirt. All the proceeds to the Snowdrop Foundation, the 501c charity. We thank Trish Klein, who heads up and really is a mover and shaker with Snowdrop, along with many, many others, including Andrew Kopelski and Kevin Klein. They hand out scholarships every year and have a big banquet with this money that's saved to pediatric cancer patients. So it's really going to be a great event. We hope you will sign up your child for it. TheDriven.net. TheDriven.net is where you can go to sign up now. And we're going to be talking about it a lot up until the date of November 22nd. Now I'm going to take you, David, back into your days playing at the Summit for the Houston Hotshots. Just take me into that time period and kind of set the tone for us playing indoor soccer back then. And it was a franchise under Giorgio Berlenghi that broke onto the scene. I believe it was 1994. That was the year I started doing television on a lot of Hot Shots games and indoor soccer. But I remember it distinctively, and just some thoughts from you on playing for the Hot Shots back in the day with a lot of excellent players that many of them, like yourself, went into coaching.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at that era when the World Cup was in the U.S. and, you know, with MLS now trying to bring soccer and professional soccer back fully, you know, there were different entities happening, and Houston had, you know, wanted such things started. A lot of the grassroots players or the different players from different backgrounds came in. I was one of them, you know, originally from Trinidad and Tobago, where, you know, as you know, a lot of the players have gone through, you know, some of the players I played against, you know, from the MLS, you know, we had a huge amount of talent from the island. But for me, it was a good opportunity to just, you know, with Houston as my home base, you know, see what more I can do on the professional field. You know, I was one of the fortunate ones that got selected, played the first year, you know, and I think it was a selling point for bringing soccer back, you know, where you guys started with the Dynamos, you know, back then with Tony and all those guys. So for me, it was just, you know, a great time of being that generation to start the rolling the dice for professional sports in soccer in the Houston area.
David, listen, we got about a minute left to go to break, but I appreciate that synopsis. I remember calling your games back then. It was a lot of fun. The Houston Dynamos were before them. Before that was Summit Soccer, the Houston Hurricanes, and then we go all the way back to the late 60s and the Houston Stars. Our soccer history is rich. We just haven't told the story very well down here. You just did a great job with the Houston Hotshots, David. David, thank you. We're going to get you back on again, and now it's up to you and me to start pushing people and HTX to get people out to this so we can benefit the Snowdrop Foundation. Thank you so much for coming on, David.
It's a pleasure, and HTX is in full swing supported. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks to HTX. David Dievertal, former Houston Hotshot, doing a whole bunch in coaching in the community. Great for him. By the way, that indoor team was owned by Gabrielle's brother, Alfredo Brenner, and the great Giorgio Berlenghi as well. And we've had them out at when we had some of these reunions. So these are people putting money into the game of soccer. The Houston Dynamos that I played on, Pete Kane and John Gaughan, these guys had no return on it. They just, you know, ownership's interesting. You're passionate about something. Now it's more of an investment now. Back then when you were passionate about something, you lost money in soccer. And those men did, and those men should be honored for keeping the game alive the way they did. All right, we take a break. Coming up next, it is Houston Dynamo midfielder Coco Carrasquilla on all things Coco and more. We'll take a break. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. LamontBrands.com for your Soccer Matters t-shirts and hats. Let's go right to our next guest. Scored a spectacular goal in the 1-0 victory over Austin FC. He is the Panamanian international. He's Coco Carrasquilla. He joins us now. First off, Coco, just describe your goal and how it came about.
Bueno, fue una situación de un balón parado donde estábamos buscando el gol. Se me da la oportunidad y me tocó improvisar de qué manera, de una manera no muy normal en mí, pero termina anotando un muy buen gol.
Glenn, that was a free kick in a situation where we needed to score. The way it kind of turned out, it just I was forced to improvise in a manner that maybe I don't typically do. So I was grateful that it worked out and happy to be able to contribute to the team and three very important points.
Panamanian international Coco Carrasquilla joins us. Coco, where does that rank all time in your goals throughout your career?
Este de la manera que lo anoté, el número uno, porque una manera que lo hacen los delanteros, jugadores con otro tipo de habilidad y yo no me considero de anotar esos goles, pero ya veo que lo pondría de número uno.
I definitely put that as a top goal, Glenn, just given that's not my profile. You see forwards score goals like that and they're known for that ability to kind of improvise in that manner. That's not necessarily my game, but happy to add it to the repertoire for this instance and help the team get those key 3 points here on the road.
Coco, that goal, I'm sure, has made it back to Panama, and the press in Panama picked up the video of it. Have you gotten reaction from people back in Panama after scoring that great goal?
No, increíble. De verdad que recibí mucho mensaje de ánimo, muchas felicitaciones, pero sobre todo el apoyo que siempre me brindan desde Panamá. De verdad que muy contento y creo que una manera de identificarlo a los panameños que queremos seguir creciendo dentro del fútbol.
It was very well received, Glenn. A lot of messages congratulating me following that goal. But I think when I look at the bigger picture, I'm more happy that it kind of shows our ability and how much this game has grown through some of my efforts, but just overall that the soccer in that country and what we can produce is elevated.
It's got to be correct to say that there must be a lot of Panamanians now that are Houston Dynamo fans.
Sí, sí. Y lo he notado desde que llegué. He tenido mucho apoyo. La gente en Panamá me ha demostrado el apoyo que quieren la camiseta, tratan de conseguirla como sea. Y hoy en día, de verdad que me siento muy orgulloso por regalarle estos momentos, que se sientan orgullosos todos los panameños y que sigamos creciendo como futbolistas.
I definitely noticed it, Glenn, even going back to my first year, I think looking back at how my time here has progressed, I mean, you've seen how, in general terms, how when I go back, you know, you see the jersey more prevalent throughout the streets, or I get asked more to bring back more items to represent the club. So it's definitely something that I take with great pride, just given that it kind of puts our flag on a broader or bigger stage. It kind of shows that our the brand of soccer and the sport overall is growing beyond our borders.
Coco Carrasquilla joining us. Dynamo getting a 1-0 victory over Austin FC. Next up is Seattle. Coco, the growth of the game in Panama, obviously the Panamanian national team led by players like you have set a great new bar now. Is there more grassroots activity when it comes to football in Panama, and do you see it growing?
Sí, yo creo que hoy en día ha visto muchos muchos programas o mucha creatividad para mantener a los niños desde muy pequeños para que sigan creciendo. Eso ha sido muy importante y esperemos que sigamos así, que nos llenemos de esa cultura que necesitamos dentro del país para seguir creciendo, para seguir explotando los talentos desde muy joven y seguir creciendo a un nivel de selección que empieza desde muy chico, demostrando el talento de cada niño.
We've definitely seen programs that are appealing now or structured more so for a younger and younger audience. So I like that that's the case just because it helps with the development of the game and kind of change that narrative about us just being a one sport nation, kind of giving us a second sport as well, looking at what we want to do here with soccer. So I think you're going to see the results with the national team at the younger levels too, just given that it's going to impact them first prior to going to the senior level.
Coco, how is it playing back in your more natural role a little bit deeper now? Is it something that you're enjoying in the absence of Hector Herrera with the injury?
No, contento con la oportunidad, ya que esa es mi posición natural. Me siento muy feliz, disfruto del fútbol ahí. No es que no lo haga en la posición de winger por derecha, simplemente que mi posición natural lo disfruto más y me toca recibir muchas pelotas y es lo que más me gusta, tener la pelota, ser creativo, tener dinámica y ahí de verdad que disfruto del fútbol.
Financial position, Glenn, so I definitely find more joy in it. Not to say that I don't enjoy playing the winger role, just it's a different position, right? So one where I've had to adapt, but I think over this last stretch where I've played more of a deeper role, I get more of the ball, I get to be more creative, I get to kind of have that kind of impact. I definitely enjoyed it just given that it's that comfort where it's a role where I'm very used to and understand what comes with it.
Why is the right wing position a little less comfortable for you? Is it because you're higher up the field? It's not as natural?
Me ha enseñado de que puedo hacer recorridos más largos. Me ha tocado aprender a defender más posicional y más físico. Y sobre todo recibir en una posición del campo que es muy difícil, donde siempre tienes presión por delante, entonces los espacios son muy cortos y me ha tocado jugar más rápido en esa posición. Es lo que me queda de aprendizaje.
One of the things, Glenn, that I had to adapt to was just some of the deeper runs, that defensive side of the game too, where I just had more responsibility. The space where I received the ball was very different, not necessarily what I'm used to, and I think when you look at some of the spacing there, that was probably the biggest thing that I had to adjust to, just because, well, yes, deeper runs, but the space is just considerably smaller. So it's definitely one of those things where I had to adjust, and on the physicality side, it was a different experience as well. So those were the things that I picked up and kind of challenged me to grow as a player and led to kind of where I am today.
That's a great answer. Coco, you're such a wonderful technical player. You're a fun player to watch play the game. Where did the emphasis on working on your technique start, and at what age?
Desde muy joven, siempre mi mentalidad está en querer ganar la mitad del campo. Entonces, para ganar la mitad del campo siempre hay que tener más la pelota y ser más agresivo contra el rival. Entonces, ese es algo que trato de hacer siempre que estoy en el medio del campo y es de la manera que enfrento los rivales. Creo que desde los 15, 16 años empecé a ser más competitivo, a mantener más la pelota, hice un cambio, pero la mentalidad siempre de querer ganar siempre estuvo ahí.
From a young age, Glenn, I think one of the things that I always thought about the game in terms of how I saw it was you had to win the midfield. And how do you do that? Well, you have to be aggressive. So as I got into my teen years around 15, 16, I kind of had that switch where I really emphasized that. And that's just been a part of my game ever since then. So, but that mentality of wanting to control the midfield and, you know, having a dominant presence on that side of things, that's been instilled in me from a young age.
Now, Dynamo fans heard for a lot of time that, you know, they thought you were going to be transferred. They didn't like the idea of you being transferred and going to Europe. Is the European dream and desire for you to play there still alive?
Sí, sí, el sueño siempre ha estado. Aún me siento que estoy en una edad que que puedo seguir creciendo, así que eso no es algo que debo ocultar. El club lo sabe también, hemos estado viendo las posibilidades, pero estoy muy tranquilo aquí y quiero seguir creciendo, ya sea aquí o en Europa. Así que esperemos que cuando llegue el momento, si se da, sea una buena oportunidad y poder destacar donde sea.
Glenn, I find myself at an age where I still feel like there's room for growth, but that's not to say that I don't want to just necessarily, or I guess when I look at it holistically, these are conversations that we're having with the team. I think everyone understands we're on the same page about, you know, what my trajectory is, what I want to accomplish. We've had conversations, and it's no secret that I do have aspirations to play at that level. I just necessarily wouldn't say that I'm in a rush either. I think I'm in a position where there's still room to grow, but I look to grow even further to be able to reach that goal.
Coco Karaskia joining us, Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. You have had some great performances with the Panamanian national team. I expect you will be in Austin on October 12th. The U.S. will play Panama. The U.S. will have the new coach, Mauricio Pochettino. What's it like for the Panamanian player when you're taking on the United States?
Creo que enfrentar a Estados Unidos hoy en día se nos ha vuelto un reto bastante importante dentro de CONCACAF, porque tienen jugadores con mucha calidad. Entonces, más que todo, es tratar de competir al nivel que ellos están y dar lo mejor de nosotros, ya que llevan una muy buena selección y nosotros queremos seguir creciendo. Jugar en Estados Unidos, ya que juego aquí dentro de la MLS, me hace sentir en casa, me hace sentir no tan incómoda, así que trato de dar lo mejor de mí para hacer un buen partido.
Well, that's definitely a marquee game when you look at the powers in CONCACAF. You definitely want to, I mean, when you look at the roster, you want to go toe-to-toe against some of these players who play at the highest level, so you want to measure yourself. I think that one of the benefits that we have, or I specifically, is that I play in Houston in MLS, so a lot of these environments I'm very used to. I don't feel like an outsider. These are very much environments that I've played in, whether it's with the national team or here with the Dynamo, so that aspect of it is probably the one difference where now I'm acclimated and know what to anticipate as we navigate a variety of different venues here in the country.
As an emerging soccer nation in CONCACAF, is the pressure beginning to build and the expectation beginning to build a little bit more from the Panamanian soccer fan based on what results the Panamanian national team gets?
Más que presión es un reto personal. Tenemos un grupo que quiere seguir creciendo, que quiere seguir mostrándose, que queremos llegar a un nivel competitivo que nos ayude en el futuro. Entonces, cada partido, más que una presión, queremos ser competitivos dentro de la zona con los grandes que serían Estados Unidos, que para mí es una de las mejores selecciones y la pongo yo como la mejor de la zona hoy en día. Entonces, más que todo, competir al nivel de ellos.
More than pressure, Glenn, I mean, this is personal to the group that has a lot of players that want to leave their mark, that want to kind of reach that bar, surpass the ceiling ahead of us, and kind of look at what's next for the next generation. And you do that by playing against some of these top national teams. And I think the U.S. is definitely among the best, if not the best, in the region. So you want to measure yourself, you want to be competitive, and then think about, you know, the impact that this has, not just, you know, following this one game, but more so down the line as well.
Coco, how much do you dream about getting to the 2026 World Cup? Who knows? You could even play in Houston.
No, jugar la Copa del Mundo sería el sueño que tendría todo jugador, y en mí en especial siempre he soñado con disputar la Copa del Mundo. Y si sería en Houston, ya esté en Houston o no, sería como jugar de local. Unas cosas que solo le pasan a pocos jugadores, creo. Entonces sería un sueño redondo, un sueño que jugarías como en tu casa, así que esperemos que así lo hagamos y sería un orgullo jugar en Houston.
Glenn, every player dreams of playing, you know, at a World Cup, and I'm no different. I think when you look at the possibility of playing in Houston, I mean, that would just, you know, bring everything full circle, right? So I would definitely feel like we would have a good advantage, a good crowd out here for something like that. And I mean, for me, I mean, in many ways, a dream come true.
How about the challenge of being the Seattle Sounders coming up your next game? How difficult is it playing in Seattle?
Va a ser un partido bastante difícil, donde sabemos que Seattle es un buen equipo y es un campo complicado donde jugaremos. Pero tenemos un grupo que ahora está levantando, que estamos jugando muy bien de visita. Así que vamos a ir con la misma mentalidad de querer ganar y sacar el resultado, porque ambos necesitamos un buen resultado y tenemos que ver por nosotros en todo momento.
It's a challenging game, not just because it's against a good team, but a difficult environment. I mean, we all know what to expect when we go to that field. I think when we look at kind of what we've accomplished this year on the road, that fills us with confidence, knowing that we can go out there and compete and look to get more points, as both teams are actually in a crunch to get as many points as possible prior to the end of the year.
Coco Karaskia joining us. We're going to wrap this up soon. Coco, does your game change on the artificial surface at all?
No, creo que no. En esa parte no cambiaría mucho. A mí me cambia más es la posición donde juego. Pero yo jugué muchos años en campo natural. Casi toda mi carrera mis años en Panamá siempre jugué en campo natural y campo muy pequeño, campo complicado, en mal estado. Entonces, creo que ya llevo mucho tiempo sin jugar en campo sintético. Pero sí que tengo buenos recuerdos de Panamá, entonces no creo que sea tan complicado para mí.
No, Glenn, when I look at the difference between grass and turf, just because, I mean, given where I played at in my youth, we had a lot of challenging fields. So I've had to adapt in many ways throughout my time as a professional soccer player. So the biggest difference might be more so if I have to change position. That's where I notice more changes, but more so the surface level, surface. No, I adapt and I try to play the same game as I would no matter what the surface is.
Last one, Coco, and you can't use Hector Herrera. Who do you model your game after, and who do you kind of look up to, maybe in Europe or South America, who plays in midfield that you model your game after?
Siempre mi estilo fue como Luka Modric. Es como el estilo que me gusta. Cuando era más joven, me gustaba cómo era dinámico, agresivo, para picar el espacio, jugador con buena pegada. El jugador a seguir que siempre me veía en el perfil de él.
Definitely look at Modric when you look at what he's accomplished in his time in the professional game. I think you notice what he brought, especially when he was younger, in terms of just his ability to be so dynamic, creative, and just really impact the game. That's somebody that I definitely tried to emulate and mold myself into.
Coco, thank you so much, very much for your time. We really appreciate it. I know my listeners do. Best of luck against Seattle.
Muchas gracias. Thank you.
Thank you, Coco.
Thank you.
We'll take a break here. A big thanks to Edgar with the Houston Dynamo for doing all the translation in this. That makes that a great interview. So thank you, Edgar Valise. And we'll take a break here. Before we go to break here, though, quick reminder, DanishInspirations.com, the best in modern contemporary furniture. Head over to Fondren, DanishInspirations.com for the best in modern contemporary furniture. When we come back, Jason Longshore in Atlanta, the Atlanta United color analyst, joins me. We talk MLS. We talk the new U.S. soccer facility there and some things happening with Atlanta United and Major League Soccer.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
ESPN 97.5.
97.5 and 92.5 is always presented by John Daspit and Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. Use the Daspit Law Firm. They're the best in the business, and they are bringing soccer talk to you. Podcasts of this show, Spotify, Apple, Google, and right here at ESPN975.com. Great friend of the show. We go to Atlanta, Georgia, and he is Jason Longshore. You will know him for his work on 92.9 The Game. He is the Atlanta United color analyst, also does college games as well, and much, much more. Jason, how are you?
Always doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, listen, I'm calling you earlier in the day, so this is an interview right now that is airing that was done earlier in the day. You're down at Atlanta United practice. What type of access do they give you? I'm just curious.
Yeah, we get out here a couple times a week. The Tuesday session has, for these past couple of seasons, has been fully open, so we get to watch all of it. You know how it goes. That later in the season, the sessions get a little bit shorter as the guys are, you know, a lot of recovery, a lot of that physical wear and tear. You're about to go into a three-game week next week, and when you're Atlanta right now and you're coming off of a game at Red Bull Arena and then going into a game against Philadelphia, you talk about physical workload. Those are two opponents that give you a lot of that. So a little bit lighter session, but it's interesting to see the topics and to see kind of the points of emphasis, because it gives you a really good baseline on kind of the thought process of Rob Valentino, the interim manager here, his staff, going into this Philadelphia game about the need to be intense, the need to play quickly, and the need to be able to get out of tight spaces because of how Philly presses.
Atlanta United right now is in 11th place, 33 points. They're only 3 points out of a playoff spot. That ninth spot is held by the Philadelphia Union. So it makes it even more. What are your thoughts on the Eastern Conference? Because you got Philly in ninth on 36 points, and then you got four teams that have either 34 or 33 points. I mean, there is a logjam there. I wouldn't say these teams have had exceptional seasons. Somebody who's had a subpar season, obviously, one or two are going to make the playoffs. But maybe your thoughts on that and the parity of the way the Eastern Conference pairs out.
I think that last bit's the most important part. It's the parity. You know, when you look at some of these teams and how games have gone this season, I think the East beats up on itself a lot. I think you have some teams that are better than their records, but the Eastern Conference has been a really physical battle. I think you have also maybe a few more teams that are, I don't know, more structured to be disruptive, like a Philadelphia, like a Red Bulls. Then Montreal started to fall into that category as well. The way that they play, you get some of these different challenges in the East. So I think the record and the total points are down, but the competitiveness is up. It's a battle. And when you look at the top three with Miami and Columbus and Cincinnati, it feels like maybe a little bit of separation there. Then there's another bunch of teams that feel like they're not in that first class, but they're ahead of everybody else. And everybody else is competing for those last couple playoff spots. I mean, you go all the way down to the bottom of the table and everybody's still in it. Everybody's still got an opportunity. We saw Nashville come into Atlanta and win 2-0 and maybe play their best game of the season. They were in last place at the time. So it's incredibly competitive. And for Atlanta this weekend, going into Philadelphia, who is in that last spot right now, this feels like a playoff game. This feels like a must win. I don't even know if a draw is enough. And with Philly coming off of a really good performance against DC, it's going to be a big challenge.
Yeah, those teams outside of the playoffs, including Atlanta United, Montreal, Nashville, and DC United, yeah, they are must wins. I don't think there's any question. And you know, there is real separation with Inter Miami, Cincinnati, and Columbus. These are the elites of MLS, and quite frankly, they're some of the most interesting teams to watch in Major League Soccer. I mean, I want to watch those teams. I don't necessarily want to watch, Philly, Montreal, Nashville, and maybe I might have to put Atlanta United in there. I'm not going to make a lot of friends, but you're picking a game out to want to watch. You want to watch these teams that are playing you know, at a level that's above everybody else right now. And I don't know. I think that's healthy.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I mean, Atlanta wants to be in that category, and they have been quite often in their history, and they haven't been this season consistently enough. I think it's been one of the weirdest seasons for Atlanta United, in my opinion, because they beat Miami in Fort Lauderdale. They beat Columbus here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, drew with Miami at the Benz recently, and went to Columbus on the opening day and played them to a 1-0 after a great playoff series last year with them. They've played the top teams really, really well, but then they've dropped points against other teams that you look on paper and you feel like results should be coming in those games. So it's been all over the place. I love what we've seen from Miami, obviously, with the Stars, and just those games have a big game feel anytime Miami is playing. The game with NYC this past weekend, a fun one to watch. It was back and forth. It felt big. Columbus, I feel like what Columbus has done over the last year and a half, go back to the beginning of last season, I think it's the best run that we've seen in 2 years in MLS history. I really do. Overall quality, what Wilfred Nancy has done from a coaching perspective, the results that they've gotten, the trophies that they've won, I think they are on the best run we've ever seen in MLS. And the question for them will be, can they maintain that for a longer period of time? That's the hardest thing to do in this league.
Yeah, no question about it. We're talking to Jason Longshore. Speaking of Columbus, they're in the Champions Cup on Wednesday. They will take on Club America, another shot at another trophy. They've done exceptional in these tournaments, as well as winning the MLS Cup. You know, to your point, I agree with you on the body of work that they've put together. I would also say, for me, teams are built on 3-year cycles, so it's it's really tough to stretch out and extend success, I think, based on roster build and the way MLS works. Would you agree or disagree with that? By the way, that statement you said about that prior statement you said, I think that applies to a lot of teams in MLS.
Yeah, I think it's tough. We saw it here firsthand in Atlanta after the way that everything started the first 3 years. Amazing. And it's hard to maintain. The cap will catch up to you. The roster rules will catch up to you. The need for players to want to go to Europe or want to go to another club, it catches up to you. You've got to find a way to manage that. I'll recommend, if people out there haven't had a chance to listen, I was really lucky to get Garth Lagerwey and Demetrios, the chief strategy officer with Atlanta United, for a podcast at 92.9 The Game. It's on Off the Woodwork. We talked for 45 minutes about some of the changes to the roster rules. They got into their strategy and how they tried to find ways to extend that window of time and to make a longer window and to think a couple years down the road, and how they structure, whether we're talking a transfer fee and when it gets paid. So that's when it hits the cap, all those kinds of things. It was a long conversation, and they were both like super open about giving the kind of talk that we don't get often in this league. And both of them feel very strongly about, and I know you do as well, that's the stuff that's going to drive the conversation around the league. We're going to talk about the games and the superstars and the great goals. That's a given. But to get into, how do you handle going to get another left winger, a position of need? How much cap space do you have? How much, you know, allocation money do you have to spend? Those kinds of things are super important. And I don't think we get enough of that in this league to have that next conversation about Columbus. How do they extend their window? You know, how do they do it?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And listen, if you look at all the other sports, how much time do fans spend on the NFL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball, the traditional sports, talking about salary caps? Do you bring a guy back or not? And I think the first step is really educating the public a little bit more into how a lot of these roster rules work with MLS, because I know you and me are still trying to figure them out. Anyway, that's great piece there. So I would suggest that Jason Longshore joining us. All right, Carlos Bocanegra left. How does that shift the dynamic, and where is the front office of this team? Talk about the coach, Rob Valentino. Does he have a shot at staying? We've heard Josh Wolf potentially. coming back to Atlanta from Austin as a rumor. Give us kind of the lay of the land right now, because on-field performance very much mirrors what goes on in the front office.
Yeah, there's a lot of open seats at the table right now for Atlanta United. And it's something that I've gotten into a lot lately. When you look at how an MLS club is constructed, you know, beyond the owner, some of the most important spots, I think there's five. I think you're talking about the general manager, technical director. That seat's open for Atlanta right now. You're talking about the manager of the first team. That seat is open. You have an interim in Rob Valentino, who has formally interviewed for the job. Garth Lagerwey told us that on pregame a couple of matches ago. So he's formally interviewed, but they have not made a decision yet on where that goes. And then your three designated players. I think those are the most important pieces for an MLS club to find success. And Atlanta has one designated player right now. There are two seats open there. So that's four big moves that could happen between now and the kickoff of the 2025 season. That's a lot. And to try to figure out where the strategy of filling those roles is going to go, how linked are each of them to one another, I don't know. And that creates, honestly, a feeling that I don't think we've really had here since going into 2017 when the team launched, when everything was wide open. It's always been maybe one piece or another. We've seen a few different managers come through, and I did see the Josh Wolf rumor. I don't know if that's the angle that they're going to go. I don't know if they're going to go domestic. I don't know if they're going to go international. I do think MLS experience is very important on the technical director, general manager side, and Garth has made that clear. I don't know if it is as important on the first team manager spot. The designated players, you know, like, they have the money to spend. What direction do they go? I think a number nine is essential. I don't know where the other spot is. Is it a winger? Is it a central midfielder? What do you do with the other designated player spot? So to answer your question, there's a lot of I don't knows right now and a lot of uncertainty that is not as typical here with this club. And it's going to be fascinating to see how it all gets sorted out between now and opening day next season.
Jason Longshore joining us, 92.9 The Game, Atlanta United radio color analyst. Let's go to you know, listen, when Atlanta United broke onto the scene, it was amazing. It was incredible soccer, the fan base. Has a bit of the novelty worn off maybe now, which to me would be very natural, much like in Austin. Has a little bit of that novelty worn off? And is it a time period that is semi-critical or pretty critical for Atlanta United to kind of wrestle that back, to remain relevant and kind of keep engagement?
It's interesting. I feel like, and I'm obviously going to be biased because this is my hometown and I've been in soccer in Atlanta.
Okay, I'm just going to say one thing before you answer.
Okay.
There were some pretty poor crowds at the League Cup.
No, 100%. 100%. I do think that if this team is winning, then it looks like it always has. If they're not, it's going to look very different. And that's where I think it shows up, that it's not, you don't have the new car smell, for example. It's not the same as it was when it first launched. But then there's the other elements to it where you drive around neighborhoods and you see Atlanta United flags more than the other teams. You see the car magnets, you see the license plates, you see all those things that are still there. I think as a team evolves, it's not a must to be there every game when you're 8 years down the road if they're not winning. If they're winning, and I see it here in Atlanta with the Falcons, the Hawks, and the Braves. And that's why I feel like it's established, in the sense that when the Falcons aren't winning, you see a lot of empty seats at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. When they're winning, it looks a lot different. It's the same with the other teams in town, and I think Atlanta United settled into that. There's always that little bit extra of uphill climb with the soccer team in town versus the established NFL team. Always that. And you can't get around that. And hopefully we do in the generations after us. But right now, I feel like if this team starts on a winning streak next season, then it looks like it did in the older days. But you've got to get there. And that's what it all comes down to in professional sports. There's a lot of competition for people's entertainment dollar. And when you're not winning, which is what everybody gets back to, the style of play is important. The other aspects of it is very important. But if you're not winning, it's a lot harder to commit those dollars to it if you're a fan. And I think we're seeing that here in Atlanta, and hopefully that changes soon.
I'm curious, with all the initial success, how much is Atlanta United out in the community? And I'm talking their players, and are they still out in the community a lot? Have they had to be out in the community a lot? And give us an assessment on that, because that would be interesting to relate to what goes on in our market down here in Houston.
Yeah, it's twofold. Like, I've seen the evolution of it in a couple ways. And look, COVID was part of it, you know, where players did not get out in the community, even after the initial, you know, major issues with the pandemic. I think there was a lot of reluctance to get back out there. That started to change. It needs to happen more. I'm with you. I think it's very important to be out there and meeting fans and potential fans, maybe even as importantly, meeting them face to face. I think where Atlanta has done a great job out in the community is spreading the gospel of the game. And that's something that I've been really important and put a lot of time to, being out at high school games, being at those college games you mentioned, being in those places as a representative and supporting it. The players, and I think some of it comes down to the personalities of the individuals, you want to go with those two designated player signings. And you can't purely sign them based off this. But you need somebody who's magnetic. You need somebody with a big personality. You need somebody who enjoys that sort of stuff.
All right, let me stop you there.
In an organized way, but yeah.
Who is that magnetic personality, and who is the face of Atlanta United right now? Could be a player, could be anybody. Who is
it? I don't know. No, that's a really good question. And when you only have one designated player who just arrived a couple of weeks ago, and Alexei Maranchuk, who is still trying to get used to being in the United States, it's hard for him to do that. It's hard for some of the guys who English is their second language to do that. You need the Brad Gazans who have been here from day one, and he does a lot of amazing work out in the community. You need the Brooks Lennons. You need those guys who have been around for a while. I also think the homegrowns are really important in that process. I think that's one area where Atlanta has been very blessed, even in these times where the wins haven't been there, is getting guys like Jay Fortune and Noah Cobb and Luke Brennan and Matt Edwards and guys who have come up in the community, played through the academy, and are now representing it, because nobody's going to understand that more than those guys. You know, they were in the stands. They were ball boys. They were fans as kids in the academy, and now they get to represent and wear that badge. Who can tell the story better than them? And it's getting them out there. And luckily, in our case, those guys have all been very involved, very community driven, because they understand it and they want to see that grow.
And it's an essential ingredient, no question. And I also am a big fan of clubs should make their DPs learn enough English that they can do
it.
Because if you can do an interview in English, even if it's broken English, It is absolute gold. Talking to Jason Longshore, 92.9 The Game in Atlanta. He is the radio color analyst. All right, the impact of the U.S. National Training Center coming there. Your thoughts on that?
It's huge. I mean, you're probably hearing construction off in the background here in Marietta, because Atlanta United's adding on to their training facility as well. But that construction's happening south of Atlanta, where U.S. Soccer is building. And it's transformative. I mean, we've talked about it before, like Atlanta, with what Atlanta United has done, has kind of turned maybe some of the conversation about Soccer City USA on its head, because I've felt it for my whole life. Like, I don't think many people respect Atlanta as a soccer town outside of the Southeast. It is. It's always been a sleeping giant.
Come on, Atlanta Chiefs, Georgia Generals. Come on.
I know.
A lot of professional soccer history and youth soccer history down there in Atlanta.
I know. There were a lot of people who pointed at, oh, well, the Atlanta Ruckus didn't draw a lot of fans. Oh, the Atlanta Silverbacks didn't draw a lot of fans. So how could Atlanta United work? A lot of prominent people with major voices said that Atlanta would be a failure in this league. Meanwhile, Atlanta came in and I think awakened Charlotte. and I think awakened Nashville to what this league could be. And you've got that trio of teams, I think, who are really going to start to push things forward in a different way. U.S. Soccer saw that. And look, it doesn't happen without Arthur Blank. You know, Arthur is a big-time steward of this game. He fell in love with it. Yeah, it's a business, but it's also a personal passion for him and his family. And he worked really hard to help make this happen. Him and his staff with AMBSC worked really hard to bring U.S. soccer here, helped find the space, helped find the land, donated a large check to help drive it. I don't know if it happens if Arthur doesn't fall in love with the game the way that we've seen it. And it's going to not just transform like the local side of it, but I think it has the potential to transform the national side. You know, you're going to have a dedicated national training center for the first time for our youth national teams, the extended national teams, coaching education. You're going to have a home. Like, all of those things that we want to see grow across the board to make our ultimate national team product better. Now they're going to have a home base to work out of, and that will affect it in a very positive way. And that's going to trickle down to the local side as well. I think you're going to see more young players want to not just wear an Atlanta United shirt, but also want to then wear a U.S. national team shirt.
The interaction is going to be amazing. How important do you think it is having an owner that is local and passionate about the sport? Not just from, you know, owners get into the business for a variety of reasons, investment, ego, passion for the sport. You know, how important is it that Arthur Blank is number one local and number two passionate about the game?
It's essential, because it doesn't happen the way that it's happened here if you don't have that. You know, I always tell a story about Arthur from my time when I worked for Soccer in the Streets, a nonprofit here in Atlanta that goes back to the Atlanta Attack days. If we want to go really down the rabbit hole of Atlanta professional soccer, we'll go to the indoor Atlanta Attack. Their community organization was Soccer in the Streets. Soccer in the Streets is still around, the Atlanta Attack or not. I worked for them for 10 years. And after Atlanta United launched, first off, the club was incredibly supportive of what we were doing in the community. And second, got involved, like immediately got involved before the team name was even announced. They participated in one of our big fundraising tournaments, the Atlanta Champions League. Carlos Bocanegra, Darren Eels played in it. Other staff members played in it. And Arthur, on that day, in a very hot May afternoon on artificial turf at a high school stadium, was out there the entire time representing the shirt, handing water to the guys coming off the field, was accessible to talk to everyone. He loved this. And I think he gets so much personal joy and satisfaction out of it, along with his family. His family, his kids grew up playing. And it's not what it has turned into if there's not that personal element to it. And that drives everything with Atlanta United, with the work in the community, building mini pitches all over the state of Georgia now. They're building 100 over this decade. Those sorts of things, you know, I'm sure he's thinking about his legacy and the end of it as well, with where this all turns out to and how it affects those future generations. But he loves the game and loves what it can do for people. And that's why he's so invested financially, but more importantly, emotionally.
Jason, great way to finish the show on the testimony of Arthur Blank. I'll never forget seeing him with a red Atlanta United jersey somewhere in South America, Central America, during a CONCACAF game that Atlanta United.
Oh, no, that's an amazing story. I'm going to finish with this. Sorry. That was at Herediano and against Costa Rica. Our first international match in CONCACAF Champions League, and he made the trip, and the private box for him was separated by some tarps and what have you. He loved that trip so much, and how everyone was so in Costa Rica at Herediano was so excited to see him. They did not expect it. Somebody interrupted our radio pregame to come up and ask if that was Mr. Home Depot. It was amazing.
It was amazing. I never forget seeing that on TV, and that just struck me so in such a big way, because, you know, when I played in the pros, and it wasn't like it is now, But we had an owner that was, you know, outside our locker room when we ran on the field and patted people on the back. It makes a big difference. Listen, Jason, we got to go. Thank you very much, as always, for all the great insight. And good luck on your next goal with Atlanta United. Thanks for finishing the show in a big way.
Thanks for having me, as always.
All right, away he goes. Jason Longshore, 92.9 the game in Atlanta. The color analyst. That does it tonight for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm are presenting sponsors. Don't forget to get over to Cactus Music. It's a great place for your vinyl, your CD, but it's also got amazing T-shirts, books, rock and roll history. It's like going into a museum. It is Cactus Music and our great friend, Quinn. That does it tonight. Podcast of this show, Spotify, Apple, Google, and right here at ESPN975.com. And until next week, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters.
ESPN 97.5.